Hello, hello. It's been a long time since the last time I have talked into a microphone. I hope all of you are doing well. I hope you all had a good start into the year. I apologize to those of you who had been waiting for episodes that I had been not active for the last few years. And please excuse my awkward speech in this episode. I think I have to get back into the habit of making these. But yeah, here we are. I've kind of neglected this podcast mostly because a lot was going on, both in the public as well as my personal sphere. It was really hard to keep up with the podcast the way that I wanted to, and so I just kind of not I just didn't do it at all instead, because I didn't want to half-ass anything. But I really miss doing these, and I have a lot of ideas, and I had a lot of ideas for episodes, so I'm trying to pick up again where I left off. I think I have to get back into it again, so please bear with me while I find my groove again. But yeah, to ease me back into the topic, I thought maybe the first episode that I'm coming back to could be something that is easygoing, and that's something that a lot of people are interested in, especially now starting the new year. I don't know about you, but I have Goodreads, so I always set a reading challenge for the year, and I'm always on the lookout for good books. So I thought maybe I can share with you my favorite books that I read in the last 2 years, so 2021 and 2022. I kind of did a ranking, but I mean, all of these are exceptionally good books in my eyes. There's not like the one that is basically, I chose six books because I keep thinking about that TikTok meme where people have those pyramid rankings from the dance show. I forgot the name of the dance show. Dancing Moms, I think. Yeah. So I keep thinking about that, and so I thought I can make my own pyramid with books. but just like the girls on the show were all exceptionally good dancers, all of these books are exceptionally good. I just try to kind of have a ranking of some sort, but it doesn't say anything about the quality of the book, just letting you know beforehand. And also a quick disclaimer, I think I mean, this is all just my opinion. You are allowed to disagree with me. Please do disagree with me. And also, if you have your own recommendations, please let me know, because like I said, I'm always on the lookout for new books to enjoy. And yeah. So without further ado, because I am feeling very awkward in front of the mic at the moment, I'll get right into it. And one of the books that I've actually read this year was something like a small little booklet I found in Beirut when I was there in May. It's called How to Mend Motherhood and Its Ghosts by Iman Marsal. And she basically, I mean, it's exactly what you would expect. The entire book is about her, I would say, gripping with motherhood. It's very autobiographical. She talks about her own relationship with her mother, and she also talks about her role as a mother and how her relationship to her children has changed her or has influenced her, or and also in some cases her being seen as a mother has affected her in certain ways. And I thought like the title just caught my eye because of my own relationship with my mother. I think a lot of us feel that, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is just my circle of friends, but I know a lot of people who feel the same way, like very conflicted about their relationship with their mother because they love her, but there's always like something conflicting within the relationship. Like we don't feel 100% comfortable with our own mothers. At least in my case, that's how it is. Not because I don't love my mother, or not because she doesn't love me, or she doesn't show me that she loves me. It's more about that there's differences, and sometimes it's very hard to bridge those differences in a, and in a kind way, let's say. But yeah, it's very interesting, especially also her experience as, you know, in becoming a mother, because I think it's also a very taboo topic for women to talk about how being a mother can negatively impact our lives. And I think it's, I mean, now there is like more and more more people talking about it, but I think especially in the Middle East, I mean in Turkey especially as well, it's like a very taboo topic. So I thought it was really inspiring and interesting to read her perspective, and it kind of also it helped me realize some things about my own relationship with my mother. So yeah, basically if you have mommy issues, read this book, it's great. It's very short. I don't know how many pages it has. I think about 100 something. Let me see. Not, yeah, 160. So yeah, but I also would like to read you a quote from each of the books that I'm recommending on this episode, just for you to get a sense of what the book is like. So the quote that I chose for this was actually part of my review. Yeah, I'll just go ahead. We are asked to witness an act of modesty and self-effacement on the part of each of these figures, but also to examine a picture of women's place in a patriarchal society where she's inevitably figured as without an identity of her own, a mere passage, a vehicle of reproduction, a conduit between a man and his child. This is, I think, from the chapter where she talks about depictions of motherhood, specifically in photography. I think I pronounced half of those words wrong, but it's okay. yeah, I thought it was really interesting, and I would recommend it to anyone if you can find it, because this also seems to be like a rather indie publication. They have multiple books of the same type about other topics. Yeah, it was really interesting. Yeah, I wanted to say something more about the publication, but I can't find it now. Okay, here we go, I found it. Kaifata is a publishing initiative that uses the popular form of how-to manuals to respond to some of today's perceived needs, be they development of skills, tools, thoughts, or sensibilities. These books situate themselves in the space between the technical and the reflective, the everyday and the speculative, the instructional and the intuitive, the factual and the fictional. Yeah, they have like other books in the series are, for example, How to Remember Your Dreams, how to Know What's Really Happening, How to Disappear. yeah, that's very interesting. I really like this. I enjoyed it. If you can find it, I would recommend reading it and sharing it as well. The book at place number 5 is The Master's Tool Will Never Dismantle the Master's House by Audre Lorde. It's a collection of essays that she had written. I think essays and speeches. Don't quote me on this, but I think that's the that's the official description of the book. It's a great book if you want to get into feminism, or if you're already into feminism, or if you want to get someone into feminism. I think it's a great starting point. She has a very, like, oftentimes when I think the problem that we have with sociology books, or that I have with sociology books, oh my god, is that they're not very accessible, because a lot of authors use a lot of big words, and you know, they try to sound extra smart, and I'm sure a lot of them don't do it on purpose, but it makes it difficult to use in, like, if you're not really into a topic, it's very hard to sometimes understand what people are talking about. And I see that now on the internet as well. A lot of people use certain terms without really knowing what it means. Like, I think a recent example of that was trauma bond, where people, you know, have used trauma bonding as something completely else, and it's actually what it actually describes. So I always appreciate when an author is more approachable in the way that they write about these topics, and I think Audre Lorde is one of those authors. I really, really appreciate her her sense of feminism and like her theories. And the good thing about, or what I really appreciate most about her, is that she was very tangible in the things that she was saying. So she was going away from the theoretical, and really had always tries to offer practical solutions within her writing that we can apply to our own communities. And she has a very intersectional point of view, because she was a Black woman, a lesbian, a mother, in America. So, you know, she tackles the issue from multiple perspectives and from multiple angles. And I think that's really interesting. It's one of my favorite books to recommend always for people who ask me about, hey, like, what book about, what can I read to get into feminism, or what can you recommend to me about this topic? This is always my go-to book if they haven't read it yet, because it's great. And I think we can learn a lot from Audrey. And I am not kidding. When I read this book, I literally wanted to tattoo every single word that she has written on my body, because it was just so good. For the quote that I mean this is a bit, you know, I guess on the nose, but the quote that I wanted to read you was the paragraph where she actually uses the title's sentence. I think, I don't know on which page it was in the book, but I think it's like the fourth essay in the book itself. But yeah, let me go ahead. Those of us who stand outside the circle of this society's definition of acceptable women, those of us who have been forged in the crucibles of difference, those of us who are poor, who are lesbians, who are Black, who are older, know that survival is not an academic skill. It is learning how to take our differences and make them strengths. For the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. They may allow us temporarily to beat him at his own game, but they will never enable us to bring about genuine change. And this fact is only threatening to those women who still define the master's house as their only source of support. This is one of my favorite quotes of all time. I just love her so much. I genuinely think that she is a genius, and I wish that I could talk to her. I wish she was alive. I think she would have, I think our generation needs her for sure. She's great. I definitely recommend this one. Then next one, I could talk about her forever, so I'm just gonna move on. Khartoum at Night is by Marie Grace Brown. This is a nonfiction book. It's an academic paper, I think. It's basically about the colonial time in Sudan, but specifically about the subtitle of the book is Fashion and Body Politics in Imperial Sudan. So it's specifically about how women found ways to participate in Sudanese politics at a time when they were not allowed to be in the public sphere. And it's very interesting, just in general, because I had a very European-centric education, which makes sense because I grew up in Europe. But I think as I'm growing older, I realized that my education lacked a lot of nuance, and also just understanding that, you know, there's other things out there and that we should learn about them just because everything is connected. And also understanding that how much Europe was actually involved in other people's, other countries' histories, and the damage that they have done, and the things that they have changed, etc., etc. Like, I seek out more information from other parts of the world, because I feel like that's something I was lacking when I was growing up. And I think it's important that because we're in such a highly connected world, that we also know about each other's history and learn from them, and just also for context, right? I mean, the knowledge is power. So It's very cliche, but I think it's very true. And anyway, so this is basically, and I think one of the biggest things that I'm very upset about is that I don't know much about Swana history, so Southwest Asia and North Africa, because, you know, that's where my heritage is, and I want to know more about the region, and its history and its cultures and all of that. I see it kind of, I mean, it's a personal drive thing, but I also kind of see it as my duty to understand more. Because, you know, like, of course, the narrative that I grew up with is like everything is the same and like everything is bad and everything is this and that. So yeah, I'm trying, and you know, the Orientalism view that I was surrounded by. So I'm trying to learn more and teach myself more or be taught more through writing and through people, through other sources. So yeah, anyway, I thought this was really interesting. I really enjoyed this. I mean, as you can, I think you can tell from the previous books that I'm very much into learning more about women's experiences and just what it means to be a woman in the current society or in the world that we live in. And when I say current, I also mean historically, because, you know, that always influences the way that we are at the moment. And I thought this was really interesting. It taught me a lot about how Britain, like about Sudan's history with Britain and how Britain fucked up Sudan as well, which wasn't surprising, but was interesting to see how that happened. It was good to know, like I learned a lot, and I also learned a lot about women, not only women's status within society and how they navigated it, but also how women came together as a collective and how, despite everything, they managed to be involved and make themselves heard. And I learned a lot of new historical feminist names that I am very excited to learn more about also going forward. But yeah, if you are into this kind of topic, I would really recommend it as well. It's just basically an examination of women's life under imperial rule in Sudan. Yeah, and there's this one quote I mean there's so many, oh my god, I highlighted so much in this book. I think there's something highlighted on every page. Yeah, like I'm going through the pages and literally there's highlights on every page. So you know, this is how good it was, but and how informative. But there is this one quote that I really, really liked, and that's why I chose it to also read it out here. But yeah, let me go ahead. Activism itself suggested a new type of community and belonging that was not directly tied to bodies. It offered solutions to women's problems that were structural rather than individual. In a 1988 interview, Fatima Ahmed Ibrahim recalled, "The Tsar ceremony gave women a false sense of being helped when only a socialist revolution would change their condition, not Tsar-type collective therapy. From a modernist standpoint, the Tsar drummings that had been traditionally used to address infertility, illness, depression, and marital strife were a misuse of women's energy. Real improvements in women's lives were only possible through sustained social and political action." Yeah. I still stand by that. Like, this was an interview from 1988, but I think this is still true. Holds up to today's current world politics. So definitely very interesting, very inspiring, very informative. Yeah, again, if you're into feminism and history, this is also one of the books that I recommend to everyone, because it offers a new perspective, and I think it also offers something. I am someone who's very like a collective feminism is the only way forward for me. I mean, I think that the collective is stronger than the individual, and I also think that the collective liberation is the way to move forward. So I thought this was really interesting, especially because I think we on social media and in the Western North Hemisphere world, I think we are mostly pushed like an individual type of feminism, like the individual goes over the collective. So I think if you want a new perspective on that, this is the book to go to. I think there is a lot that we can learn from past generations. Even if it doesn't always seem like it, but I do really, yeah, I would, just saying that I would really recommend this. Yeah, then we're coming to our top three, which was, yeah, I mean, all of these were equally great. So this is not, again, not really a ranking, but these are all fiction books. The first one is Pachinko by Min Ji Lee. She wrote a story about, it's like an intergenerational and also international, but an intergenerational story about a family from Korea starting in the early 90s going through Japanese colonization and at some point like the immigration to Japan. It was very heart-wrenching, the story itself, and the fact that, I mean, you can tell that she really did her research, but the fact that this is also something, like, it's a fiction book, but what happened in the book itself is not that far from reality. It's something that many people still have to, yeah, grapple with to this day, and it was very, very, yeah, sad. What was interesting to me was that, because it's in an intergenerational story, like, you literally start out with, like, the grandmother in the book or the great-grandmother in the book, and, you know, you go through each of the generations, and it's mostly women, like, in the book, like, the main characters are usually the women, but then in the last, I think the last two generations are men, and it, for me, it was very hard to sympathize with the men as much as I did with the women, even though their stories are also, you know, tragic in a way. But yeah, I did still enjoy it, and I did cry at the end. I also cried a lot in between, but yeah. Is again very interesting if you want to learn more about history in, like, in Korea and Japan, and just like social status and how Japan as a colonial force really robbed people of their human dignity, and still continue to do so to this day. It's quite terrifying to see, and to know about this. I mean, I knew parts of it because I had written my thesis in high school about the comfort women, which were, which is what they called the abducted women, the abducted Korean women by the, who were taken away from their homes by Japanese soldiers and forced into prostitution. So I kind of knew, I had some context, right, to the story. But this was, I mean, the book isn't about that, but I think it's very interesting to see how, yeah, how women navigated this space still, even if they weren't abducted. Yeah, again, I mean, this book had like a big impact on me because, again, I knew things about the colonial time of, you know, Japan, but the fact that it had still, you know, rippling effects to this day that are continuing to influence people's lives and like affect people's lives in this way, was an eye-opener. And yeah, the story is very well written as well, so if you're interested in this type of topic, I think you will really, really enjoy this book as well. And yeah, the quote that I chose was, it's actually the I'm not gonna spoil it, but by giving context, but yeah, it's very short. It's what she was seeing again in her dreams was her youth, her beginning, and her wishes. Yeah, and I will leave it at that because I feel like otherwise I will spoil it too much. But yeah, so moving on to the second to last book is a quite controversial one. It's A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. I hope I pronounced that right. It's, yeah. This book, I mean, out of all of the ones that I've mentioned so far, I think this one is the most known because it was very heavily criticized and discussed online specifically. Just in case you don't know, it's basically about these four protagonists, these four men, and their lives, like from basically the moment that they met until their lives end. It's four protagonists, kind of, but there is actually like one main character, which is Jude. And the book, the reason the book was very heavily discussed was because there was a lot of violent. Well, violent. Yeah, I mean, there was self-harm, and one of the characters was self-harming, and because they have a lot of trauma, and a lot of people criticize it for being trauma porn. I have to disagree with that because for me to classify something as trauma porn, I would have to, you would be able to tell that the writer enjoyed writing it, and or that the audience is supposed to be enjoying the scene, but it never felt like that. It was really the moments of self-destruction. I felt them very personally because, I mean, it's something I have went through as well, and I didn't see it as trauma porn because it was something that you could tell it was bad and you were supposed to be in pain with the character, and that's how I felt as well. It was really hard to read through these scenes, and that's why I also, this book is actually one of the books I wouldn't recommend to everyone. I don't think this is for everyone. The story can be very triggering, and I don't think, I understand that some people don't like the aversion to reading it. I do. And I think it also, there was a point in the book where I was like, I don't know if I can continue reading this. So, you know, to those who didn't want to read it or who found themselves unable to finish it, I think that's absolutely fair. And you don't have to read the book. And if you do, I just, you know, be prepared that it will be hard to read at some points because it is really heart-wrenching. It deals with a lot of difficult topics. It deals with self-harm, it deals with trauma, it deals with abuse. But the reason I don't understand why people call it trauma porn is I do think it's unfair to call it that because of the complexity of the story and the characters and the detail in writing. And I do think that it's too a simplistic view to label it that. Because again, there is no deviation of pleasure for the audience. There's no glamorization of the traumatic experience. It truly shows how horrific trauma can be and what it can do to you, and also the showing you that no matter how hard you want it to go away, it will healing and healing and getting better is not a linear process, right? There will be moments where you relapse, there will be moments where you feel worse again, and healing takes patience, and it takes time, and I think what she did great is that you really feel for the character. You feel with the character, and she puts it into context. And again, I don't think she's glamorizing the trauma or the abuse or the self-harm, I think you feel the brutality and the destructiveness of it. And I think that's the point, because the character who's going through this, like, he has gone through awful things, and the fact is that people go through awful things, right? Like, I mean, I was about to say all of us, but I mean, yeah, I guess all of us go through certain things. I think there is a degree, of course, to the horrificness of it all, but you know, like, it's not a competition or anything. I just think it's important that we are able to talk about heavy topics. And again, I get, what if this is not your type of book, like if this is not what you want to read, completely understand, you do not have to. But I think that what I didn't understand was people actively trashing the book, because I do think that it is doing important, that it is an important piece of fiction, and I think it will become even more important in the future. And I think the title, A Little Life, is so fitting, because it's truly, like, you know, people I think also make it out to be like everything is horrible and everything is bad, but actually the book, I mean, all lives have bad moments and joyful moments. There's, you know, there's an intricate balance between those, and I think that's what makes something alive, right? And so I think what she was really trying to do is showing that, you know, different lives and what they go through, like what the people go through, and the good and the bad, you know, and the fact that she could take us through like other people's lives in a way where she was able to show the tragic things without romanticizing it, I think shows what kind of capable author she is. I do think that it's important, again, I do think that it's important to talk about these topics, and I think that her portrayal, because it is so nuanced and because it has so much context and because of the way that she wrote it and the way that she presented the characters, it made sense. And I think that this book made me more compassionate and empathetic. And I do, again, it wasn't all bad, you know what I mean? Like, there was also things I felt very grateful and fond, like in the character's name. And it made me appreciate my own friendships and relationships even more. And I think if a book can do that, I think it's a good book. You know, it's very long, which, again, I think goes to show that she put in a lot of effort into really having this nuanced story. And for me, like, it's really about, like, the moments of friendship and companionship, grief, loss, hurt, love, what it means to be vulnerable, you know, as a human. So if you feel like, I want to stress this, I don't think this book is for everyone. It deals with very, very, very heavy topics. And it's a reoccurring thing, because, again, it's about someone's life. So, and as we all know, trauma has a way of showing up multiple times through our lives. So if this is not something you can deal with, don't read the book. But if this is something that you can grapple with, I would really recommend this book. I mean, this is definitely one of the best books I've ever read in my life. And I don't say that lightly. So, but for the quote, I actually chose two quotes, which were the most important to me, or not the most important, but this is what stuck with me the most, I would say. So, you won't understand what I mean now, but someday you will. The only trick of friendship, I think, is to find people who are better than you are. Not smarter, not cooler, but kinder and more generous and more forgiving, and then to appreciate them for what they can teach you and to try to listen to them when they tell you something about yourself, no matter how bad or good it might be, and to trust them, which is the hardest thing of all, but the best as well. This is one of my favorite quotes I think I have ever read in a book, and it really stuck with me. Like, I keep quoting it, which is really funny because my memory is shit and this quote is so long, but it's what I truly think makes the book so great, is the relationship of the characters to each other and how they love each other and how they hurt each other as well because they're so close to each other. Yeah, I'm tearing up thinking about the story. I'm sorry. But yeah, I think it's a great book. But I wanted to read something else as well, which is like, this was more towards the beginning of the book and this is more towards the end of the book. And it goes, "No," Willem said after they'd all stopped laughing. "I know my life's meaningful because..." And here he stopped and looked shy and was silent for a moment before he continued. "Because I'm a good friend. I love my friends and I care about them and I think I make them happy." Yeah, I think... Oh, I'm gonna start crying again. Oh, yeah, I just really... I really appreciate the characters in the story so much. And I think it's... I don't know. At the end of the day, I think a book is supposed to be able to make you empathize and foster compassion with the characters, and also then consequently foster more passion, I guess, but I meant compassion and empathy towards the people in your own life. So yeah, I think this book taught me a lot, and I appreciate it for that. So yeah, take it or leave it. I think people are allowed to their own, like, they're entitled to their own opinion, but this is what I was able to take from it. So yeah. Then the last book that I wanted to recommend is actually the last book that I read of in 2022, so it's very fresh, so maybe that's why it's on top of my pyramid, but I do believe it's a very, very wonderful book, and I want to thank my friend Maura for lending me the book, because and for recommending it to me, because it is also truly one of the greatest books I've read in a long time, and yeah, also very heart-wrenching story. Can you tell I like crying when I'm reading? It's just, I don't know why. I know why. Like, I do find it quite what is it called? What is the word? It's a release for me. Like, I'm not someone who cries a lot in my personal life, just because of who I am as a person. Like, I'm very, if there's a problem, I usually go through it. I get things done, you know what I mean? Like, I get more busy, I keep myself more busy, or I shut down, but that's the more unlikely response. So this is kind of like when I watch a show or I watch a movie or I read a book, it's like my way of relief, I would say, if that makes sense. So yeah, this book was also very emotional for me, and I think it would be for anyone. It's called Human Acts by Han Kang, and oh boy. let me tell you this. Okay, wait, first let me give you context. So this book is set around the events of the Gwangju uprising in May 1980, so about like 40 years ago. And if you don't know anything about the uprising, it was basically like a workers, how should I say? It was like a workers' rights protest. There was also political, there was other things that involved, like that caused the uprising, and people were demonstrating against the martial law government. there's more to the history. If you don't know about it at all, I would recommend listening to the four-part episode on it from the Working Class History. I'll put it in the show notes so that you can, if you're interested in the historical events behind where the, for what the book was set, I would recommend you listening to it. But basically, I mean, it was the working class was demonstrating, which is why which is why it was like often described as a working class uprising. You know, like they were protesting for better working conditions but also for other things. But yeah, I think, don't quote me on this, it was a long time since I read that, like I listened to that episode. But yeah, anyway, the book has I think 6 or 7 chapters. Let me double check. It was 7 chapters. It's 6, but then there's an epilogue as well, which is also a chapter. So yeah, and each chapter is from the perspective of another person involved in the story. So it starts with the boy, I think. Is it the boy or a boy? Oh my god, I should have. It's the boy. It starts with the boy, 1980. And what I thought was so interesting about this chapter is that it's written from the second perspective, singular. So it says like the first sentence is, "Looks like rain," you mutter to yourself. And I thought that was so genius, like a genius way to draw you into the story, because it immediately makes it a personal story. And anyway, so you have this first chapter where you are this 13-year-old, I think 13-year-old, right? 13-year-old boy looking for your friend. And the author introduces the other characters that will be the main subject of the other chapters in this first chapter as well, through the eyes of the boy, which is basically you. So it was very interesting. And I really, really, first of all, I enjoyed the writing style, because and the person, like the POV changes through each chapter, right? So she doesn't write all the chapters in second person singular, but yeah. But the way, it's so interesting because you start with the first chapter, each of the characters is introduced, and going on, like, because you have the context of the first chapter, the other chapters just give you more and more, like, even more context to what was happening. And it's so interesting because not only is the POV of each, like, each main character of each chapter is different, but also the time is different. So the first two chapters I think are both set in 1980, yeah, but then moving forward it's always like 5 years after, 10 years after, 15 years after the actual event took place, like the uprising took place. And it's again, if you don't know anything about the uprisings, it was very, I think it was a very traumatic event. A lot of people died. It was really horrible. And it's not that long ago, right? I mean, it's not even a generation ago that this happened. So seeing the story through this young boy's eyes, and seeing how it has affected people over the years, and how they're still trying to deal with the consequences of the events and their personal feelings and emotions and thoughts and wounds, was very gripping to me. And I am not kidding, I cried on every page of this book. There was some pages that were worse, but definitely every single part of this book made me emotional. And I appreciate the author for choosing
this way of writing and this way of storytelling. And the epilogue is actually, it's set in 2013. So basically the story spans from 1980 until 2013, chronologically. So the quote that I chose was also from the last chapter. I crept into the main room in search of that book. I scanned every spine until I finally got to the top shelf. I still remember the moment when my gaze fell upon the mutilated face of a young woman, her features slashed through with a bayonet. Soundlessly and without a fuss, some tender thing deep inside me broke. Something that, until then, I hadn't even realized was there. This quote stayed with me. There is a lot of other quotes that... that stayed with me. There was one about I couldn't hold your funeral, so now my entire life has become a funeral. That also stayed with me for a long time, and I think it will stay with me for a long time as well. I want to read her other books as well, because I really enjoyed her writing style and the way that she gives context, and I said this like 3 times already, but the way that she gives context and the way that she really takes you through the story as if it's something very personal to the reader, I think is very astonishing. And like I said in the beginning of the episode, for me it's very important that we get, that we learn more about history on a global level, because I think we owe it to each other to not forget and to do better in the future. So this was one of those books that I would definitely recommend to learn more while at the same time, you know, I don't know how to, it was really hard for me to read this book as well. Like, it's very hard for me to talk about this book because it's based on real events, and this is something that people, again, are still going through. People who have to deal with the consequences of what happened during that time still. And so it's very hard for me to like say anything about it in terms of quality or like, you know, but what I can say, I think it is culturally significant, and I think everybody should read it, because we can get a lot from this book. I think we can learn a lot, and I salute the author for writing it very much. Han Kang-ri did something there, and I don't think a lot of authors could do that, so I really appreciate her for taking on this project and for delivering it like a masterpiece like this out of it. So this is it. This is all the books. I talked more than I thought I would. I'm sure most of it is like but I hope you still enjoyed it. If you have read any of the books and you want to share your opinion, please feel free to do so. I'm always looking forward to having discussions with you, to having thought and idea exchange. It's important. And if you have other recommendations, please let me know. And if you are planning to read any of those, let me know as well, what you think afterwards, if you get around to it. I hope you have a wonderful week. Please stay hydrated and eat well and take care of your health. It's important. And I hope to be able to have some kind of rhythm with these podcasts again. I know it's not going to be weekly. I do have some things planned, and I hope I get around to them. I'm aiming for at least 4 episodes this year. Let's see if I can keep that promise to myself and to you guys. If I get to do the projects that I have in mind, it's gonna be I think very interesting for everyone and engaging. I hope so, at least. So yeah, hopefully I can share some more with you very soon. And until then, take care and bye-bye.